Session number 16713, Mr. M. Waterston, Reel 4.
Mr. Waterson, Reel 4. In addition to bayonet training when you were in the Territorials prior to the war, Mr. Waterson, did you have any experience of grenades and using grenades?
No, we didn't do any. In fact, I never did any training of grenades until we got to France. And then when we went into action, we still didn't carry any grenades or anything out. We didn't have any. You know, there's supposed to be a box of grenades in the company, like, but I didn't know where it was. But when we first got called up, I was still on the cadre for training. I used to get off work soon, so I could go an hour before the drill started to do an instruction on the Bren gun. That's how I learned to do the Bren gun, because we had to start teaching the company. Because, I mean, the sergeant and that were just in the same, sergeant and NCOs were all just in the same bus, you know. And I'd just got my stripe in the march. I was appointed to unpaid Lance Corporal in the march of 1939, and I was just bundled in with the sergeants and all that, learning to do the Bren gun. Had just come in.
That was a new weapon.
That was our new weapon. Not the new weapon, the Bren gun, and the boys' anti-tank gun. Here was the two new weapons that we were going to win the war with.
Did you like the Bren gun?
I did like the Bren gun. And I think I was the only one in the Blinken company that fired it in action. But when I fired it, there's nobody said this fired it. I nearly fetched the plane down with it, and you boys, it was up at Wallace, in that big wood, you know.
We'll come to that when we get into France. Had the Bren gun any faults, any problems with it at all?
No, accurate. That was his big fault.
It was too accurate.
Too accurate. And you had to keep changing the barrel too often, you know, regulating the gases and all that. That's what spent most of your time with the Bren gun. I mean, it was a good gun, but you had to wave it about yourself to get in the arc of fire, you know. It was a good gun. But when we were taught that the magazine would carry 30 rounds of ammunition. And after 1940, when they got back, I think they realised that 30 rounds of ammunition in one of their magazines was too much. It was cramping, stiffening the, pressing out too hard on the spring. So they dropped it down to 28.
And did that improve it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether they improved it, but that went on that like all the war after that.
You said that the barrel had to be changed. What was happening to the barrel when it was fired?
It was getting too hot. And you see, it was just like a cast barrel, and it was inclined to melt. It got too hot.
So how many spare barrels needed you to carry with you?
There was a spare barrel with each. What you had to do was, when you fired over so many rounds of ammunition, you know, fired so many rounds, you had to whip it off, drop it into some water or something, you know, to cool it down and put the other one on. See? And that's how you were on all the time. And you were advised that when we were training, they said we had to put it in a bath of water. And how the hell are we going to carry a bath of water around with us with that? But as I say, we carried them things all the way from Belgium and that, and yet we never used them.
You mentioned the boys' anti-tank rifle. What was it like as a weapon?
I never know. I never even seen it fired. As I said, an incident in when we were at Wallace. When I came out of this wood, I run out to over to the wood with a brain gun and fired it at the planes that was strafing us. And when I came, when it was all over, at least I'm saying when it was all over, when they finished strafing us and all that, we thought it was all over. I came out of the woods to join the rest of the company out the other side of the road there, you know, against that wall where it was supposed to be, the road down to Wallace. You know where the bus went down to Wallace there, that, with all the other companies was round that wall on that side, because there was another road, crossroads, down to Wallace, you know. And when I come out there, they were struggling to try and get a magazine into the bridge, you know, to try and fire it. They were expecting some tanks coming up this road from, because the Germans were just down in the valley in Wallace. And they had a full corporal, Bobby, Tony Bainbridge, you know, Tony. He says, Amos, he says, get a hold of this, he says, and see if they can get this magazine in here. I says, well, how can I get it in, Tony? I didn't know what they expect me to get it in.
It was a difficult weapon to fire.
Difficult. It was a useless weapon, really. I mean, I had a lad there, a big lad, he's still alive yet, and a lad called Acton carried it all the way from, he simply carried it all the way from Belgium. And when we got to Wallace, he said, well, come to fire it. He didn't know how to fire it. I mean, I never fired it, but most of the company had fired it into, you know, when we were at the day. When we went down to Oxford there, we went from the drill hall from Durham to Oxfordshire in October, back end of October. We went down to a place called Chippy Norton there, you know, the Dane. And there, most of the company fired it because just before they went to France, and I was in the battalion hospital, you know. Big toenail took out, ingrown toenail. And that's how I never fired it. Like that. Tony said to me, hey, you, corporal, he says, get a hold of this, he says, and put the magazine in. So when the magazine wasn't getting in, the only thing I could say was pull around out the magazine and stuff it up the spout.
It wasn't particularly effective against tanks.
I didn't know. Did it get tilted? I mean, we never saw it fired. I never saw it fired. I couldn't tell you whether it was supposed to penetrate the tank and whirl round inside. It didn't explode or anything like that. It was an armour piece and four-inch shell that... But buzz round inside that can cause confusion in the tank. That was the idea of it. But after that, I couldn't say anything. I was glad when I think it got left lying there, where we left it.
Did you get any experience prior to the war in your territorial training with 2-inch and 3-inch mortars?
No. When we got called up, I mean, we had a mortar platoon. The mortar platoon was, and I've got a photograph of nearly all the lads there. I got some photographs out, I didn't know where I put them from. And we had a mortar platoon, 3-inch mortar platoon, and then my brother got attached to it, and they went down to Washington. Did that training down at Washington, you know, and came home at night, you know. Say they used to go away off in the morning, truck and then back, and till we went to France. And then after they went to France, it was just because we got a two-inch mortar. And we were with a lad having experience of the two-inch mortar. He was so platoon 2-inch mortar on. And
did you get to fire the 2-inch mortar?
No, I never got to fire the 2-inch mortar. We never got to. I didn't think any of us got to fire the 2-inch mortar because it was only smoke. We only had 3 smoke bombs for it. We never had any HE for it. Because, I mean, if my brother was telling you the story, he would tell you how he was, when we were at Wallace, he got sent back by the officer to get some mortar bombs. And he said, what's the use of them? He says, they're only smoke. He says, I want to drop some mortar bombs into the valley where the Germans were. So, no, Bob says, well, he says, we'll only smoke them out. He says, we're kind of day now. So after that, that's when things got split up, like we got parted then, and from then on, it was everybody going for himself, sort of style.
We'll come to that story later. Anti-gas precautions, did you have any anti-gas precaution training?
We did have anti-gas training.
What form did that take?
We received our gas masks, then we used to have to wear our gas masks for an hour every day. Certain parts of the day would get the word gas alarm, and then we'd have to whip old gas masks around and go about with them for about an hour each day. And then we were fortunate enough to have the rescue team, you know, for the mines rescue team, just at the bottom, right, you know where the rescue brigade is, there at where the Burnout Hill is, opposite the Burnout Hill, there. That was the mines rescue gas alarm. And they took us down there and put us through the training down there for mustard gas and that. And we went through several, we had 2 or 3 trips down there, and they put us through the gas training, you know, got to the, with the 5 brigade men, you know, the brigade men, they put us through, the officers and that put us through, all of us. And we had that about 3 times, that training.
What had you to do?
Put on our gas masks, and then we went through like a tunnel. They had a gas tunnel, and when we went in, they would drop a little gas bomb, and we'd stop in there for 2 or 3 seconds and march through the other side. And then we had to keep on respirators on and that till we got calmed down, and then whip them off. But they used to make a lot of us, the gas, you know, we used to make a lot of us sore around about it, and then we brought it in. I think that's why they cancelled that training. Because it wasn't it was the gas that they were for down the pits, you know, what they had. Anyway, it was an insight of what we maybe had to do, you know, I mean, if it had happened. And which it did happen really in some place when they come through France, you know, through Belgium, they fired some of the lads were under a gas attack. But fortunately, we didn't were on the run all the time. I think it was.
Did you have any pre-war training in field tactics and movement?
Oh yeah, there was, as I say, down when we. We used to go for our drills and that, you know. I mean, we had an ideal spot there up down at Horton, you know. I mean, we had all these movers and Mosley and that, you know, to do all our training with. I mean, we could come right across Mosley and that right away down to our battalion HQ. I mean, on training, most of our training was outdoors, you know, when the weather was good, like, I mean.
Was it movement training, or were you digging trenches in the old First World War?
We never dug any trenches or anything like that. Because we weren't expected to dig any trenches. Only when war was getting properly opened out, you know, really, they made us dig them trenches. They were building a road through here. It was supposed to go down here, really, because the marketplace at where the drill hall was, gravel walk, we used to call gravel walks, through at the top of the cut. And there was a the beginning of the road was already made, you know, they were filling the sandstone and all that in. But they cancelled it because the cut, you know, was tombs in, you know, in built into the tombs, and they couldn't get any farther with it. That was before the new road was that's built up there now, you know.
That's the cut between Horton and Sunderland.
Yeah, good. The road was supposed to go straight from Durham here this way, along this street here. But because of these council houses and too many cemeteries on that side, they couldn't get through that way. Or just over the top of the Moseley Bank there, and down through Hetton, you know, into Caroline Street, you know, across the marketplace, straight up the cut. And that's where we did our train. And when it was getting, when we once got an air raid, you know, a plane came over from the same harbour way, you know. You know, the first air raid we ever had round about here, that was in just the beginning of October. We had an aeroplane came across from, so they decided that we should bring, in case of invasion, when they started putting the blocks up, you know, along the seafront and all that, we would dig anti-tank traps down the side of this road. And that's what was one of our trains, digging. That was the only digging that we ever did. And we did patches, you know, and that, but because we were that far behind, it was only now and again that we would get any training, you know, like that. And it wasn't until we moved from to Horton, like from Durham, from this area, to down to Chipping Norton, that we really did any training like that, digging weapon pits and things like that. And, it was terrible. It was hard on a morning. Frost, real thick frost, fog and that. Used to freeze you, dear me. But I was very, when I recollect now, I was very fortunate not getting out with the company like that, because we've been short of NCOs. I'm nearly always Orderly Corporal. I used to rub Orderly Corporal about three times a week sometimes, because I think I was the daftest one, I think, really trying to be our, you know, trying to get on and on, you know, trying to boost myself up.
Where were you when war broke out? Do you recall where you were when that announcement was made?
In the drill hall. Because we were, whenever we, it just happened as when I was in the 4 to 11 shift, you know, in the afternoon, to go to work at 4 o'clock at the pit, at Horton Pit. We used to spend some time up the drill hall to keep in touch with what was going on, you see. And it was on a Friday morning. We were all packed, ready to go to camp, back to Shieldbottle. Eh? We'd been down our training, you know, putting our drills in and that, for to go to camp. And when the week before we were called up, we had an advance guard called up. We had an advance guard. They were on for about a fortnight. The advance was called up. And we started to go to the drill hall regularly, you know, on a morning. I mean, the lads that used to drink and get a drink, and that I wasn't old enough to get a drink, to tell you the truth. We used to, you know, waiting for word coming through.
Did you realise then? And then when we,
when it was getting closer, that was when we started to dig the tank traps. We filling sandbags, really. We went to filling sandbags. They put the sandbags right away around the drill hall, you know. But when war was declared, they sent the Remy out. You know, the RAs out, the Royal Engineers and all that came out and did all that work.
When war was announced, what were people's attitudes around you? Kind of things where you hear people saying?
They were worried. People were very worried. You see, because I didn't think we'd had enough idea that we didn't actually think it would be in war, you know. And then when we got called up, I mean, you boys are all people who lived around the doors and all that, and there was a lot of tears and anxious moments, you know, when we went to the drill hall every morning. And on the Friday morning, it was getting on to nearly time to go down home, 3 o'clock. You know, I used to go down home at 3 o'clock, get ready to go to work. When word came through that the troops were being mobilised, you know, to prepare for war. So we all went off. Instead of going to work and getting my pit clothes on, I went down to home and got me khaki on. And my brother, he'd just come from working first. He'd just come from where he'd been to work at 2 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock, and he was just had his dinner and he'd just gone to bed. And he said, "Bob, you have to get up and get your khaki on now. You've been called up." And he wouldn't believe it. He just turned down and went to sleep. I says, "Dad," just says, "you'll have to tell him." I says, "because," I says, "I'll not have to wait around." I says, "we've been one of the few ends of yours." I says, "I'll have to get up there." So I went to my khaki, and my mother was in tears. My dad would have been a soldier, you know. He was trying to keep them back and that. And I off, up the drill hall. I mean, silly fool me, I should have waited. I mean, a lot of lads waited till the next day. And I always felt sorry for me brother then. His dad had got him up, he got into his car, and he was one of the first ones up the drill hall. So he shoved a rifle into and bayonet into his hand and tells him he was on guard. And he did the first guard at the drill hall. And we just potted around, getting our equipment together and all that, you know, all the things that we should have when we keep saying, "you're regular soldiers now, you know, you're regular soldiers now." And the lads was wondering what was going to happen, and that lad married men and that, you know, and they were coming in.
Was there any feeling amongst some of them that they didn't want to be involved, wish they weren't involved?
A lot of the lads that was the key men of the company and all that, you boys, when they got... Well, I mean, to say they were all miners, eh? They were all miners. Well, I thought we would... You know, they all thought, well, the miners, they'll not get called up, see? They'd say. But they did get called up. Not for very long, like.
There's no attempt by the Coleridge to get you back?
Not at that time. Not at that time. Not at that time. But when they saw what happened in our area, in the Durham County area, they got a shock, and they had to apply for them to come back.
This was too many men going out of the world.
Well, I mean, they nearly closed Appleton Pit down. I mean, we had about 10 sergeants, and 5 of them was all Mr. Shifter and Colliery Oman and all sorts. Well, I mean, Mr. Scott was second lieutenant. He was manager Horden. It's like that. Well, I mean, it was laughable. Everybody laughed at it. It was when we got called up there, Appleton Pit was closed down, Hetton Downs was now. And Pit. I mean, I was just a little pony, one of the boys with driving off the putters. There's 3 putters and about 6 fillers at my flat. and they're all in my company, and I was in charge of the lot of them. They used to say, we used to have a bit of fun, like, you know, during the day when we were working. I used to say, oh, well, wait till next week. I'll be the one that's doing the shooting, you know. I just, like, and they used to laugh at us. And the first week we were called up, I was in charge of the men that had to go for the piers at Horton. And I think it was about 20 of them, 20 or 30 of them. I marched up to Houghton and got the piers. I never seen any man of them. I mean, they didn't realise that, you know, that they had to be, you know, they were regular soldiers and all that. Next year there was hell on. Where did everybody go and day? And I never see them. It wasn't until I got Mr. Scott come in, you know, that I could talk, pick talk, you know, say. And he says, what happened? I says, well, they got all the way with their mothers. I says, you know what they like? They had to share their pay. See, I mean, they used to about 10 of them get all the peers on one big pay note, and they had to be shared out, and this, that, and the other. And rather queer, I never thought of two of the lads, it was my putters, they come and give me 10 bob a piece, you know, they used to give the, for, you know, helping them out, you know, they used to give us a bit extra on top of me beer. And I got about half a quid, a pound in me pot. Boy, that's a lot of money then, you know. And
so they'd gone off as soon as they got the pay?
They'd gone off as soon as they got the pay, they'd gone for a drink, soon they never turned up at home, never mind now what else. They were drunk and that. Come in all times during the night in the drill hall, drunk and that, they spent their peers and everything. Because they'd had the army PSA.
And was there a feeling around that the war might be like the First World War with all of its slaughter?
No, I know. It wasn't going to last 6 weeks. Yeah. How the devil can you get killed when they've only got wooden tanks? They'll be fighting you with wooden tanks.
Is this what
aeroplanes has been out and bombed all the wooden tanks off the fields and everything, man, written out. We walked through them, man. The boys.
The belief was the German army wasn't up to much.
We wasn't. We beat them the First World War. What stopped us beating them again? I mean, we got to France and we see all the trenches and all that, and then you boys, we got up into Belgium and we see these big tanks come out. Damn me.
How did you personally feel of the fact that now war was on and you may well be endangered at some spot?
I never thought about it. I was just a kid. I mean, I was starting to go somewhere in life. I was a lance corporal, I would soon be a corporal and this, that and the other, and and I knew me training, I knew me stuff.
It was kind of an adventure.
It was, yeah, I mean, it was just a big sport. I mean, all me mates was there, and that we used to. I used to drill a guard and all that, and your boys, the lads, used to say, oh, man, must shut up, man. You know, they used to say, didn't you say that to me again? And the office was trying to bring and impress us. If anybody didn't do as we were told, report them and put them on a charge and all that. Well, I mean, you boys, if me brother did out, I wasn't going to put him on a charge. It was rather awkward at times. When we first got called up and all that, we had two companies in the drill hall. You see? The first, but the old day company, the 8th battalion, and D Company, 11th Battalion, eh? Till they got them sorted out and shifted along to the race course, you know. And I got the chance to go along to the as a full corporal. And I often used to wonder after a while, I said, oh, I'm not, because, as I'm getting forward my story again, after the second week, the mines was empty. So they had to get the miners to go back. So So, I mean, there was about 8 of you. We were short then, short of men then, our company. Well, when he asked, the captain asked, Captain Goodenough asked, if anybody would that was miners would rather go back to the pit, that jobs was waiting for them in that, had just gone up to the colliery office and they would start the following morning. Now. Too true. Captain Goodenough was standing in front and he used to think the world of our company, they're the best company in the battalion, you know, D company, best riflemen, best, you know, I mean, everything, best football teams and everything. And he just walked away, he broke down in tears when he realised how many men was going to leave his company. I mean, the company that he'd had there for nearly 3 or 4 years while he was there, they're all men that went to, you know, at the drill hall and they used to be good at everything, was just walking away and leaving them. They did, I mean, they just walked out and leaving them. And me brother and 5 of me mates went back, you know, I've only gone back to the pit. And I went up, because I, you know, I've been Lance Corporal, he said, went upstairs, can I go back to the pits? No, I said, you can't, you're an NCO.